Going through the car wash this week. Gordon Eggerson calls out Baloyi. Did you ever struggle coming back from the off season?
No. Be careful what you say, Brian. I call you every day.
Guess who Brian's talking about here?
I think it's just a hope for me that he will play until he's about 38, 40.
Yeah.
I think he's got the genetics. He's blessed with that. And he still has the hunger and the desire to play.
And which goalkeeper did Spider-Man leave off his top five?
I would definitely agree. I would definitely agree with Brian, all those goalkeepers. There is one goalkeeper that he may have missed out. I'm not sure if he actually, he did play in the PSI era. It's a...
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on Sakala Duma Radio. This is a Sangana Corner.
Good day and welcome to the car wash. This is episode number 36. On today's show, what is Safa's role in the PSL restart? More retrenchments at Bidvest Wits, and what's next for Percy Tau and Bongani Zungu over in Europe? Whether you're listening to the show on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Game Time on Mahikang FM, welcome to the show. It's my pleasure to be joined by four-time PSL winning coach Gordon Eggerson. Welcome to the show and happy birthday, Gordon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Slu. Thank you.
And also joining us is three-time PSL champion and former Chiefs and Sundowns goalkeeper, Brian Baloyi. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And happy birthday to coach there.
Thanks, Brian.
They are standing in for Teko Modise, who will be rejoining the car wash in August, and also Sean Roberts, who's just become a father. A big welcome to the world to his son, Teo Malcolm Roberts, and congratulations to Sean. We are all super proud of you, bro. So let us start with the first. So I'm going to have to do all of Sean's features. He has a few features on the show, including the joke of the day. Yeah. So every week, I think the jokes get worse, and I'm hoping to change that with this one. So, gents, get ready. What is the difference between England and a tea bag? Well, the tea bag stays in the cup longer than England.
That was much better. Maybe you should take over from Sean in the jokes.
Yeah, he's under big pressure now.
You heard them, Sean. It came from them, not me. So, starting with the first story of the day, we of course have to talk about Safa and the PSL because it's all that we can really talk about. So, I'd like to highlight most recently Highlands Park director Sinki Mnisi criticized Safa, stating they have taken their eyes off the ball and are playing politics. And so the first question is, are Safa politicizing the PSL's restart? Because there's multiple stories coming out here. So I think the format we'll start with Gordon and then go to Brian. Gordon, what are your thoughts on this kind of disjointed restart that we're experiencing with the PSL?
You know, Slu, I think first of all, I need to say that, you know, that this season has been totally indifferent to every other season, as you know. I mean, this virus has really put a spoke in the wheel, and there's so much at stake. You know, there's people's lives at stake. There's sponsorships involved. There's, you know, we want to get the league finished. We want to get a winner. We want to get a new team promoted and a team relegated, whatever the case may be. But there's so much at stake here, and I think it's got to do a lot with, you know, we can talk about politics, we can talk about all these things, but at the end of the day, I think both parties need to be correct, and they've got great responsibilities.
Brian, what do you make of it? Do you think that there's something else happening behind the scenes that maybe we're not clear on?
For me, I would say, both parties are at fault. No one can point out at Safa or PSL between the two of them because of we all, it's not a secret. We all know the differences they've had for many years. You know, and so for me, I would say no one is an angel between the two. And they suggest, at the end of the day, football and the public is the loser, is the one that suffers. And, you know, each party can come with, you know, explanation on whatever, you know, is happening, and that Safa is politicizing this, is doing that, PSO is doing this. But at the end of the day, you know, there's regulations and stuff that needs to be followed. And you know, you hear stories from the one side, and then you hear other stories from the one side. I think for me, government, as much as FIFA doesn't allow government to get involved in football matters, but I think for me, in this case, government should be involved, and government should be the one that really lays the rules, and so that there can be, we can finalize this issue, especially with, you know, on the health issues and that are there that have to be followed, and all of these, on the one side, SAFA has to take responsibility. So for me, I think government should play, you know, the referee, if you may say. But for me, I think it's long overdue, the problems that we've had between PSL and SAFA. But I think we should even be using this situation to rectify all the wrongs that have been there for many years.
Now, you mentioned government playing referee, and speaking of referees, it's kind of one of the issues that SAFA raised. And it's an interesting divide here, Gordon, because if it's a referee fitness issue, which they've mentioned, then that's a SAFA problem that they should have actually been in charge of. And if it's a PSL team's compliance issue in terms of COVID, then that's PSL's responsibility. So this kind of split task, what do you think it really is? We haven't really heard of any compliance issues officially, but they've suggested it. What do you make of these rumors?
Look, I think, Stu, the most important thing here, and I think Brian hit the nail on the head, there's two bodies here. First of all, we mustn't forget that the governing body that runs football in South Africa is SAFA. They are the governing body that run football in South Africa. And the PSL, they run the league. So now there's got to be a lot of correspondence between the PSL, I would say, and the Minister or Minister of Sport or the Minister of Health, because the government now have taken over completely, and rightly so. They need to make sure that there's, if anybody wants to come back and play football, there needs to be a negotiation between the PSL and the Minister regarding the protocols, how's it going to take place, where are we going to play, what fields are we going to play on, is there going to be travelling, is there going to be safety, are there going to be doctors there? All these things have to be in place. Once those things are all in place, then the Minister will make a decision and say, if you've got all those compliances, all those protocols in place, then I'm happy for football to start. Now the question is, SAFA have to say, right, we can start on this day or that day. If there's a problem somewhere along the line, if it's for referees, for example, if they haven't had enough time for referees, but I think for the referees to get ready. But the most important thing is there's got to be a working partnership here. If there is a problem, then let's sort it out. Between SAFA and between PSL, sit down and say, right, I'm quite happy for you guys to start on this date or the 28th of July or whatever the case may be, but I'm just a little bit worried about this particular situation. Let's sort this one out and we'll start next week. But that's how it's got to be done. But we mustn't forget that the governing body who runs football in this country is SAFA.
Now, Gordon, staying with you on this, there was a breaking news on today, the day of recording, that FIFA has allowed SAFA to extend the season beyond August. Do you think that this is a step in the right direction and perhaps relieve some of the pressure?
Yes, without a doubt. This would definitely release a lot of pressure because, I mean, you know, obviously there's a deadline. We're dealing with a professional league here. We're dealing with players that are, you know, you can't play every second day. You've got to stretch it out. And if they've got a little bit of time, all these little things that are, we are not even sure. Is it referees? Is it the protocols aren't in place correctly? Is it whatever the reason's been that gives them a little bit of time now to sort out? And if that is the case, then there's absolutely no doubt that at this moment of time, I think the government has said that football can go ahead as long as these protocols are in place. So all we need to do with a little bit more time now is make sure those protocols are in place, make sure our referees are all fit, make sure whatever the problems there are that we really don't know exactly what they are right now, let's pick them up and let's start. And then if we've got that extra bit of time now, then there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't start very soon if the protocols are in place that the government wants.
And now, Brian, from the fans' perspective, and even maybe from a player perspective, do you think that the issue here is that SAFA and the PSL don't show a kind of united front here? Because SAFA does their press conferences, the PSL does theirs, but we never really see them do joint press conferences. And they seemed to be headed that direction at the end of May, that, you know, there's going to be a joint task force, joint this. But now it just seems disjointed again. Do you think that's the problem, that on the surface they seem divided?
Yes, like I said, I mean, and there's a lot of underlying problems and that have been there for many years. And they are kind of using this pandemic to surface. And for me, I would say there's a lot of stake here. There's jobs at stake. There's a whole lot of lives at stake. I would say I would love to see government getting involved and saying, okay, here's the situation. We're giving you PSO this task, do this. We're giving you SAFA this task, do this. And iron out all the problems and the reporting. And because a whole lot of these issues are about who reports to who. And for me, I think government should just sit with them and say, and again, when we're talking of referees, we talk about PSL says this, SAFA says this about referees, but there is a Jerome Damon that is responsible for referees. Then bring him in, let him say his piece. What is the real issue with the referees? You know, and then we can have a way forward. But like I said, for me, the issues that are there, it's not the issues that are at play right now. It's a whole lot of issues from long ago that are playing itself out right now.
Yeah, and as you said, I mean, and Gordon, we were speaking off air about Mato Madlala. Now, she did an interview where she said that they report directly to the minister. But that contradicts what the minister said a couple months back, where he said, no, SAFA has to play an overarching role here. So do you think that just using the media to air out all of this nonsense?
No, I think obviously that the PSL have got a huge task ahead of them, because they've really got a lot of work to be done regarding, and they've done it, it sounds like, because they wouldn't have been passed by government to play if all this work hasn't been done. But there's no doubt in my mind that McLeod definitely reports to the government, but regarding the health issues and what's been put in place, because I'm sure the government has said to, they've spoken to the PSL and said, right, what is the situation with X, Y, and Z? Traveling, what fields are you going to be playing? Where are you going to be playing? How are you going to be playing? All these things. And that is a lot of work. So there's no doubt in my mind that somebody from the PSL had to be talking to the ministers regarding all these issues. But once the minister has said, yes, we can now play, it's out of their hands. Because, I mean, at the moment, you must remember, the governing body and PSL now are in the hands of the government. This is definitely government decisions getting made. But the government doesn't want to overrule anybody. They're just having a look and saying, yes, we're happy to be played. If they had said, no football can be played, cancel football until the end of the year, Not even the FIFA could have said, no, you must play football. At this moment of time now, the country is run by the government. And all these little protocols that have to be put in place and decisions being made, whether we can play contact sport, whether we can or can't, what we can do is government. But once government say, yes, you can play, if these protocols are in place, then there's a procedure that the PSL and SAFA have to go through and then get it done.
Agreed.
Yep. Just to add there, if I play devil's advocate, I would say according to FIFA rules, government is not supposed to get involved.
Exactly.
And so for me, all structures of football, they should be reporting where? To SAFA. That's what the FIFA says. Unless it has changed.
But I think, Brian, in this case, it's not a matter of reporting, but it's a giving a report, I would say. I wouldn't say at this stage that the PSL or SAFA are reporting to the government. But what they are doing is giving reports to the government regarding their status at the moment and asking that permission. We feel we can get going if we put all these things in place. So I think the wording can be a little bit tricky there when one says we report. I don't think it's a PSL report to the government, but I think what the PSL are definitely having to do is give reports to the government, stating their status at the moment, and the same as FIFA.
Yeah. And I think the main issue here is the reason for government's involvement has to be specifically because it's COVID and specifically because it's a pandemic. And so government has to be able to cover their asses. Otherwise, they would just kind of back off and say, it's football, go to SAFA. You know what I mean? But now it's a risk factor because of lives. So it's an interesting thing and it's a developing story. We'll probably have to talk about this next week again. But moving forward, I would like to challenge one Brian Baloyi, legendary goalkeeper, to let me know who his top five PSL goalkeepers are. And even if you can tell us a little bit why, and then we'll obviously have some commentary from Gordon, who's coached a lot of these guys.
The PSL era.
PSL era, yeah.
Okay. Myself. Number two, I'd say Andre Arensa, mm-hmm. Kelvin Mullen, Ikune, and Munib Joseph.
And Munib Joseph's, who I think is about to retire. He's about to take a coaching role there at AmaZulu. So that's an interesting list. So number one, you put yourself number one. I mean, I guess you had to.
No, yeah, it's not in any particular order. That's my top five.
Oh, that's your top five. Then Gordon, what do you make of that? Who would you say is the best keeper you've coached?
I would definitely agree. I would definitely agree with Brian, all those goalkeepers. There is one goalkeeper that he may have missed out. I'm not sure if he actually, he did play in the PSL era. It's William Opara. I thought William Opara would be amongst those five. But you know what, Snoo, we've had so many good goalkeepers. I mean, Brian, Kune, William Opara, you know, Asenzo, Monib, Darren Keat, as I mentioned, Brian already, Ronwyn Williams, up and coming. I mean, he's 26 or 27, but being with one team. Yeah, so you know what, there are so many, and it's so difficult. You know, I went back, I mean, I know if it was all time, not only PSL era, there's one goalkeeper that Brian would definitely have mentioned, and I will mention him now, was Patson Banda. I mean, he was a great goalkeeper for London Pirates. I mean, he was a character, and, you know, he came out and punching balls, and people loved to watch him play. You know, he never probably had the technique of a Brian Baloyi or a Gary Bailey or a Kune, you know, William Opara, but he was one of those goalkeepers that was a stop shotter and very agile. And, you know, so, yeah, we've been actually in this country, we've been quite blessed with goalkeepers. We've had such a great quality of goalkeepers coming through. It's been fantastic.
Yeah. Brian, I'd like to ask you this question. Gordon mentioned Ronwyn Williams, right? Ronwyn hasn't won the league, of course. I mean, SuperSport are more cup specialists. What do you think he has to do to break that top five?
Geez, a lot. He'd still have to break that top five, like Coach just mentioned. There are a lot of people that I would still, he wouldn't still make my top 10. I would still have, if having making a top 10, I would put in a Senzo there. I would put in a Williams Okpara, like Coach is saying. You know, then I would put in a Rowan Fernandez. So for me,
Monique Josephs,
he wouldn't even make the top 10 as yet for me. So, yeah, he would even struggle to make the top 10 for me.
Interesting stuff. I mean, we have been very blessed. Weeks ago, we were talking to Sean about, have you guys seen Sundown's current goalkeeping situation and the number of solid keepers they have there? And they tend to do that with backing up a lot of positions with depth. But right now, I mean, they have Onyango there. They have, I think, Jody February is coming there. They have Riyad Peterson there. They have all these guys, and so it's a league in which there's an overabundance, it seems. They just signed Ricardo Goss as well from Wits. There seems to be this overabundance, and even if you look at Chiefs, you have Kune, who's struggling for a place because of Akbei. I think the only big three team that's looking for a keeper is Orlando Pirates at the moment. Actually, let me pick your brain about that. Who would you say? Do you think they should go for who's the Maritzburg United? Oh, Richard Ofori. Do you think Pirates should be chasing Ofori?
Look, I think they certainly need to have some backup in their goalkeeping department, because over the years, you know, since the sad passing of Senzo, you know, there's been quite a huge gap there, you know, and I think the goalkeepers need competition. And they need to, you know, so they really need to improve in that department. But you must also remember, Snoo, you know, goalkeeping department, the goalkeepers only, I won't say only start improving, but they only start maturing at a much older age. You know, when you look at goalkeepers today, the guys are 33, 34, 32, and they're the best goalkeepers around. You know, Monique Jones went to 38. Yep. So these younger goalkeepers are all so talented, but I can tell you right now, the 21-year-olds and 24-year-olds are nowhere near going to be when what they like when they get to 28 and 29 and 30, because it's just one of those things. Our goalkeepers are the ones that play the longest, obviously, and in my opinion, they're the ones who work the hardest. I mean, our goalkeepers, not only our goalkeepers, but all goalkeepers, they got to work so hard all the time. You know, up and down, diving, short stuff. You know, anaerobic endurance they got to have. They just train so hard, and they actually train harder than the players. And this is why they last so long. Because their bodies are such in good shape. One name we left out earlier on was Andre Arensa, another one of the great goalkeepers, you know. So we've really been blessed in that department.
Yeah, but my biggest concern, I would say, yes, maybe Pirates should go for Ofori, but my biggest concern is, you know, the three big clubs playing with foreign goalkeepers. So my concern is really for Bafana. And I think this is a concern that's going to be there for the next 5 years, is that, you know, when you look at Sundowns, they have, you know, about 2-3, you know, big foreign goalkeepers in their books already. They're signing all these youngsters that should be playing and that should be getting not only game time but experience. And now when you look at competition for the funner places, that's where now, you know, and I think we're going to have a big problem in the next coming years. Post Kune, and even now him being in his now mid-30s but struggling to get game time.
I think Kune was a little bit unlucky as well with his injuries. You know, he got injured, didn't quite recover from that, you know. But you're quite right. I agree with you, Senzo. We got good young goalkeepers coming through, but some of them are being kept out of the teams from foreign goalkeepers and much older players.
Definitely. Well, moving forward, we have the international news desk. So we're going to have an insert here. Kurt Buckerfield is off today, the day of recording. But we had an interesting chat, and interestingly enough, we start with a goalkeeper, David De Gea. Play that, Simon. All right, Mr. Kurt Buckerfield, we are recording this segment apart from the usual show, so you won't be able to talk to Brian and Gordon, but that is because you are going on holiday. Where are you guys going?
We are going just up to Tilbach, just for a quick little, 2 day stay, while my girlfriend has work up there. So yeah, I mean, we're just gonna take it easy, take a chill.
Very, very nice.
Much needed break.
Indeed, indeed. You've been working hard, and, somebody who should work a little bit harder is, Manchester United's own David De Gea. Big dip in form, errors against Spurs, Everton, Watford, and now Chelsea in the cup. In your opinion, what's going on there? Should he be dropped? Is there a situation in the goalkeeping department that needs to be handled? What's the deal?
Yeah, so firstly, to be honest, I'm not sure what's going on at all. I do think that they should be dropped, but it's important to note that there are two big extremes here. You know, one side is saying De Gea needs to be sold, he's completely over the hill, and the other side is saying the best goalkeeper in the world, we can't drop him. And he quite clearly isn't the best goalkeeper in the world, and he hasn't been the best goalkeeper in the world for a while now, and it's been 2 years since this dip in form really started. I've been quite surprised with how Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has handled the situation, and I don't mean that in a good way. I just feel, you know, with Sergio Romero on the bench, it's quite, or at least it could be perceived as disrespectful to him, who's been capped 96 times for Argentina, when your number one isn't performing, but he's still being picked every week. I think that when a striker doesn't perform for a couple of games, he is benched, and I feel like the same sentiment should be applied to De Gea. I think he's a great goalkeeper, and he was hugely instrumental for Manchester United in those struggling years post Alex Ferguson. You know, so he's definitely, he still holds his value, and I still think that he has a great future ahead of him. I mean, he's only 29. Goalkeepers generally peak around City won anyway. So I'm not saying that David De Gea is finished. I just don't feel like he should be in the side right now. I think that being dropped to the sidelines would do him the world of good. You know, sometimes you'll get a positive reaction, other times you won't, but you need to give it a try right now. It's simple.
Do you think that if Manchester United were to decide to sell David De Gea, that another team on Man United's level, Man United's caliber, would be willing to sign him and give him a second shot as number one?
I think so, but I think the tricky part is that De Gea wouldn't be cheap. You know, he signed a new deal just last year, which made him one of the club's highest paid players. So it would be extremely difficult for a club to sign David De Gea right now. And that's kind of the situation United have put themselves in. De Gea's dipping form was long before this new contract was signed. So it's quite a catch-22, especially when you consider that they've got a young goalkeeper out on loan at Sheffield United who's done brilliantly in his debut Premier League campaign, Dean Henderson, and then Sergio Romero on the bench. So it wouldn't be that easy to ship him out if he were to lose his place altogether.
Interesting commentary there from Kurt, and it speaks to the same stuff that we're talking about here. I mean, David De Gea, 29. BBC actually posted an article where they said, did De Gea peak in 2017, which is an odd thing to say this keeper peaked at 27, or 26 rather. But if you're Manchester United, a club of that size, especially what Kurt's saying, with Sergio Romero on the bench and Argentina international, Gordon, what would you do as coach? Do you bench De Gea for a while, or do you keep the faith and hope his form turns around?
No, you know what? I think, Slu, I think what might be getting missed here is the fact that there's been this virus and players haven't been able to train. And a goalkeeper needs to train every day, twice a day. He's got to be punished out there. He's got to come for crosses. He's got to punch. He's got to get his timing right. He's now, because when you're a goalkeeper, just one step up here, one step up over there. And, you know, if you, no matter what sport, I mean, if you're a boxer and you train for 1 year continuously, twice a day, every day, and you're training and you're on top peak form, and one guy comes back from injury and he trains for 6 weeks, he's never going to be nowhere near the level. I don't think you can become a bad goalkeeper overnight. I don't think that. So I would be prepared to rather make an excuse for him at this stage and say, you know what, it might be down to the type of training they've been able to only do in a short space of time. Yes, get another goalkeeper. You know, like he said, there's a goalkeeper playing now and he's very young and had a fantastic first season. But when you're playing for a big team, like Barcelona, Real Madrid, you know, the coach puts in a young goalkeeper, and these young goalkeepers are going to make mistakes. They're going to make a mistake here and a mistake there, and it'll cost you 3 points here, and it'll cost you 3 points there. And you're not going to win the championship if that's going on. So they want to have the top quality goalkeeper, and they're probably using this period of time now for De Gea to get more game time. By dropping him, he's still not going to progress. So maybe he's been a player's coach. And he's saying to David, listen, I know where you are at the moment. Keep your head up. You'll get there. Another game behind you, and hopefully he gets better. But I would certainly put it down to the fact that he hasn't trained the way he should be training, and that's why his form is like, you know, just one timing of coming out for a cross, getting into a situation. You just don't get there, and it's a mistake. And some of them look like they're easy mistakes. You know, some of them look like, how can a goalkeeper of that caliber make such a silly mistake? But it happens. It's, you know, he's a human being, and he's got to be in top condition.
Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, agreeing with Coach. But for me, looking at De Gea, I think he hasn't been the same since about 2 years ago, especially when there was those rumors of him going to Madrid, and when that didn't happen, then I think for me he's had and again I think that one of the reasons that the club and the coach would be loyal to him would be at the time when Man U wasn't doing so well, he was their best player, he was saving them, you know, week in, week out. And so then when he's the one who's not, who has a dip in form, so the club, I guess, the coach, then would kind of feel that it's an obligation to, you know, back him. And but for me, I think he should have moved to Madrid that time. And like Coach says, I mean, you have Argentina number one again sitting on the bench, and I would have thought as well that maybe then the Romero would be playing, you know, the FA Cup.
Yeah.
But again, I think coming out of this situation now, having not had so many games to play, I think the coach as well looks at not only the form, but looks at, you know, game time, and that if he had to play Romero in the FA Cup, he hasn't played in so many months, hasn't been proper training in so many months, he can't take that risk. So there's a whole lot of things that, you know, come into play, and I would hate to be a coach or to be a Solskjaer at this moment. And that's why I never wanted to be a coach, having to deal with such problems.
Well, speaking of coaches, I also spoke to Kurt about Zidane and the stellar season that Madrid have had. Take a listen to this one. And moving forward, we have new La Liga champions. So Zinedine Zidane has led Real Madrid to a La Liga trophy after the little bit of a tight title race, but towards the end there, it kind of looked like Madrid were running away with it, and Zidane is kind of finally getting his flowers and getting his respect despite having a hat-trick of Champions Leagues. Why do you think it's been so long that people have disrespected him and kind of like said that his wins were circumstantial or stuff like that? Why do you think it's taken this long for people to genuinely give him the stamp of approval?
Well, I think that it might not be this simple, but it could be down to the fact that Zidane's first spell in charge, he was coaching a very, very informed Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think that people attributed all of Real Madrid's success to Cristiano Ronaldo. So I think it's only natural for people to say that while he's, you know, he inherited a great side, not much of the work was done by Zinedine Zidane, but I don't stand by that argument at all. I think that he is a brilliant coach. And, you know, the key word here is trust. And his players trust him. He doesn't have to scream and shout to have authority. His name is Zinedine Zidane. He was one of the greatest players of all time. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that becoming a first-team coach is easy, but it does mean that he has everyone's respect before he opens his mouth. And what he's done really at Real Madrid this season, and he actually did it in his first spell too, was place a lot of focus on La Liga. You know, he said that he wants Real Madrid to get back to dominating domestically. He's had a very, very clear focus on you know, going for that La Liga title. So he's done a brilliant job. You know, he's done a brilliant, brilliant job. He only won La Liga once as a player, back in, I think it was, I can't even remember, 2001. But, you know, over the last 10, 15 years, Real Madrid have fallen quite far behind Barcelona when it comes to La Liga. And look, it's a nice position to be in for Zidane to say that, well, you know, we've won enough of those old Champions League. Let's focus on the league. But that's down to the hard work that he's done and that he's put in. You know, he's a football person. He's a brilliant football brain. But his players trust him, and it's paid off, you know.
Definitely. And, you know, they have their spot in the Champions League still. They have that tie against Manchester City. How do you rate Madrid's chances at this year's UEFA Champions League, considering we have an informed PSG, but they tend to, you know, they're serial bottlers. We have Barcelona and Napoli, Atletico Madrid, all these guys who are still, even Bayern Munich, incredible this season. What do you make of Madrid's opportunity in the Champions League? Do you think they're in with a shout?
Well, you know, what we saw now, since football resumed in La Liga was basically, the league be reduced to a tournament, format with just a couple of games. You know, the trophy was within reach, and it was perhaps therefore easier for Real Madrid's players to wrap their heads around, you know, just going all in, all together, let's pull together and achieve something special, which they've, of course, done. So I wouldn't put it past them entirely. I still think they've got to overcome a very strong and hungry Manchester City side. I know that they've dropped off themselves this season under Pep Guardiola in the Premier League. So that won't be any, you know, that won't be an easy task at all. But, you know, you have to back Real Madrid when it comes to knockout games, big knockout games. They've got the know-how. Of course, they don't have Manchester. They don't have Cristiano Ronaldo. But what they do have is a squad full of experience. Zidane has come in, well, at least this season, he's placed all his faith in the big, you know, the Modrics, the Tony Kroos's, the Casemiro's, Sergio Ramos, Karim Benzema, and of course you'll have a fit Eden Hazard. So you can't write them off completely, but look, it would be incredibly difficult, of course. But technically, Zidane has never not won the Champions League as a coach.
Interesting way of looking at that one, right? So what do you guys make of Zidane as a coach? Where does he rank for you guys in terms of Europe's great coaches? We have one more international section with Messi, but I just want to get your opinions here.
Yeah, look, I think obviously, you know, he got involved, obviously, in coaching, and he got a great team to coach. And I think it took him a little bit of time to stamp his kind of style of football, his philosophy, how he wants to do things. You must remember, whenever a new coach comes in, he's not going to go in there and say, well, I'm going to play exactly the same as the last coach played, because he's got his own personality. And I think it's taken time for that to come across. But the way he's done it, as he said, the players trust him. He's got the respect of all the players around him. And when he speaks, people listen. And he seems to be the type of coach that will get on quite well with the players, because, I mean, the type of players that he's got, there's no reason to do too much coaching. You know, you've got to really manage the players, because there's so many stars there. And sometimes when you leave one or two players out, there can be problems, because they feel they should be playing and they start these little rifts. But that doesn't happen when the team is winning. When the team is winning and it keeps going on, people know they've got to fight for their place. And I think slowly but surely he stamped his authority on that team, and they all realize now what they've got to do. And I think he's going to get better and better. You know, he'll get better and better.
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think for me, the other thing that we always have to always be mindful of with Madrid and Barcelona is that a lot as well, there's a lot of politics going on there, you know, that we would never understand. So coaches at these clubs, there's always a bit of, political, interference when it comes with the president of the club and all of these things. And especially even when there is, elections coming up. And so there's all of these things as well play a part in that. And again, for me, I think Zidane being, the figure that he is for the club, both as a player and what he has achieved as a coach, I think a lot of other people don't want to give him that respect and for him to have both as a player and as a coach that he's won Champions League. He's now won it with as a coach now again, and three times, and like always, the issue of the type of players that he would have had in the team for him to win, part of it is because of Ronaldo. But if he wasn't, I mean, coach will tell you again, like he says, players is about egos and all of these things. So if he wasn't able to stroke Ronaldo's ego in the right way, he could have been fighting with Ronaldo, Ronaldo being angry and Ronaldo not performing. So he has to get the credit has to go to him, as a coach, that he's been able to keep so many players with big personalities happy. That's part of the coach's job. You know, that one of the biggest jobs of coaches that people never pay attention to. We always put a lot of emphasis on the technical. But for me, I believe the technical is not so much important than the man management. Exactly. And that's one of the things that Coach Gordon was very good at as a coach.
High praise. And lastly, we have a quick word on Lionel Messi. Have a listen to this discussion.
On the other side of Spain, we have Barcelona and Lionel Messi. I heard that Messi had an hour-long meeting of some sorts with the coach. Now they have this focus on the Champions League because it's the only thing they would want to win. And so, but what I want to focus on is Messi himself, because in a dull season for Barcelona, a disappointing season, questionable business, questionable board, he still managed to be the top goal scorer. Is that a signal that despite Barcelona's struggles, this isn't the swan song for Messi? This isn't the end for Lionel?
No, of course. I mean, you have to wonder, you know, how much better those numbers would be, and his assist numbers too, in a much stronger side. And I think those numbers, look, he got 30 goals across all competitions and 25 assists. And that's just so far because, of course, you have the Champions League around the corner. And those numbers really just tell you everything you need to know about him and how he is just judged differently to others by the standards that he himself is, of course, set. If any other footballer in the world posts those numbers, they're the front runner for the Ballon d'Or. But this has just become normal for Messi. So, yeah, I mean, this season, Barcelona were incredibly poor in La Liga and in the Copa del Rey. So to achieve those numbers in a season, like you mentioned, Slew, that has been filled with fallouts with board, with Eric Abidal, with the president, with the coach. They've, of course, seen a managerial change. So to post those numbers in a season that has been incredibly difficult, it's just phenomenal, yeah.
Well, Kurt, as usual, thank you very much for joining me. Can't wait to have you back in the normal show so that we can interact with the co-hosts. I think by the time you're back, it'll be Deco and Sean back in studio, back to normal. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. Have a great one.
Cool, Slew. I'll chat to you guys next week. Enjoy, man.
Sure thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
And so there you have it. So just a quick, I mean, you know, we speak about Messi every damn week. So I'll just ask you this much. He's 33 now, another fantastic season despite all of the stress. How many more years do you think we have of peak Lionel Messi before he retires? You know, this is around the time that players start slowing down. Do you think that we're about to witness that, or do you think we still have some time left? Gordon?
You know, I think it's going to be totally up to the player. You know, he's got to, you know, when he wakes up in the morning and he thinks to himself, oh, hell, I've got to go to training today, then he's going to stop it immediately. He loves the game. He loves doing what he's doing, and he's doing it at the highest level, and he's still probably amongst the top five players in the world. You can't take that away from him. 30 goals, 30 assists, you know, he's absolutely brilliant, and he works very, very hard. So, you know, it's going to be hard for him to retire when you're in such top form, because he still wants to play, I suppose. And as I said, he'll make a decision. I mean, obviously, he's earning big bucks, and, you know, go for it. He's having fun, and he's loving the game. And, you know, play it while you still love it, because, you know, people mustn't forget about the game. It's something that, no matter who you are, you can be Lionel Messi, you can be Ronaldo. You've got to love the game. You've got to respect the game and love it and enjoy doing it. Don't sometimes just do it because it's your job. You know, oh, I've got to go to work today because I have to. You know, he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to. He can stop and retire now and live forever and ever and ever how he wants to. So I think it will be his decision. And I still think that clubs will want him. I mean, if he could go to Manchester United tomorrow, if Manchester United could get him, they would take him tomorrow and probably break the bank to get him. That's the kind of player he is.
For sure, for sure. Brian?
Yeah, I think it's just a hope, and for me, is that he will play until he's about 38, 40.
Yeah.
And I think he's got the genetics. He's blessed with that. And I think, like coach says, if he still has the hunger and the desire to play, that's what will carry him. But for me, I think physically, I don't think it would be a problem for him to play. The one thing that's going to be a challenge for him, the older he gets, is the desire and the hunger to play. You know, and we're having achieved so much. You know, as a player, you know, having won all that is there to win on a personal level and a club level. I know, you know, there's that desire still for, you know, to win some more things at national team level. But for me, I think, I know he just broke the record of official 1,000 goals. Mm. You know, he keeps breaking records every week, every month. And the one thing, like I said, it would be just the desire and for him to still want to play.
Definitely. So to end off, I mean, we hope that international competition doesn't get delayed too much because of the COVID situation. But we all know Messi's real goal right now, he's won everything at club level. I think his real goal is the World Cup, and we hope to see him at another one. He won't be too old for it, and he'll definitely still walk into that Argentina squad when it comes around. But as we move forward, we have a story around Bidvest Wits, who, of course, will be moving to Limpopo under the name TTM. And a kind of you know, it's a solemn way to close off this chapter of the 99-year history. But we are hearing reports that 29 or as many as 29 employees will be retrenched from Bidvest Wits because obviously they can't move with the club. Wits has proposed paying out 1 week's salary for every completed year of continued service. That appears to only apply to non-playing staff. Indications are that should the season go beyond the end of next month, then the players and the technical team could be paid pro rata. So what do you guys make of this? I mean, Gordon, it's just a sad way to end this club's incredible run, you know, and I don't think anybody is happy about this.
You know, look, it's very, very difficult. You know, it's obviously football is a big business in the world and in South Africa and all over. And, you know, when a club gets sold and you've got to get rid of, or not get rid of, but there's no space for the ex-staff, it's very, very difficult, you know. And I think there's so many lessons to be learned here because I can tell you right now, these players are definitely going to start adding certain things into their contracts regarding this kind of situation. If the club gets sold, you know, I can't just be given my clearance. I need to be paid out or this or that. So there's going to be a lot of, because, you know, it's not often or every day that a club is getting sold. But when it's a club like Wits University with such a, they're an institution. I mean, Wits University, if you can correct me, I think about 98 years old, just under 100 years old, being there at the highest level for so many years, having great players there. And, you know, they're gone. And, you know, they're going to be missed, of course. And the name is going to be changed now to something else. And they're going to just disappear. The same as Manly Rangers disappeared or another team just disappears that were there for a long, long time, you know. So, yeah, I think it's difficult. What do those guys do now? Because the new club that's bought them, and they've done nothing wrong. They wanted to buy a club and they negotiate. They bought a club. They want to have their own staff. They've got other people involved. So this is really difficult for the members of the team that's been sold, because where do they go? What do? They've been there. Some of them been there for 20 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, some of them. So who knows what's going to happen? It's very tough.
Brian, your thoughts?
My thoughts are with this staff members and their families. And for me, this is one of the things that really are very painful in South African football. You know, this thing happens almost every season, coach. First division is still professional. So yeah. When you look, if you follow in the last 10 years, how many clubs have been sold, you know, in the PSL and in the first division? Most of them are in the first division. But I think for me, the problem is in the foundation. And until we fix that, we will always have these problems in South African football. You don't see this anywhere else in the world where you find Liverpool being sold and then Liverpool is moved to Manchester and the name is changed. Only in South Africa these things happen. And we can't keep on having the excuse of that football is a business and it's business people that are running these clubs. Football is not a business. Football is about people. Football is about community. That's where we go wrong in South Africa. Until we fix these things, we'll keep on having these problems.
Definitely, definitely. You know, it's a story that I don't want to keep talking about because the first couple of weeks when we spoke about it, it seemed like it wasn't going to happen. It seemed like no way, and then it happens, you know. But moving on, I think I'd like to try and cheer you guys up with a much more lighthearted feature, which is the Secret Footballer. Secret Footballer is where we take a look at our sister publication, Kickoff Magazine's back page. Somebody from the league or involved in local football tells a story, and this one is quite funny. He's speaking about coming back from the off season and the difficulties that they go through in training. So he says, I quote, "I remember one player who came back after preseason and nobody recognized him. He had put on 10 kilos, mostly around his neck and his face, and he looked terrible. He was immediately nicknamed Sumo by the rest of the players." So I wanted to ask you guys if you guys have any preseason funny stories that you know, the difficulties of coming back from the off season where you're not training and where, you know, you might overeat and overindulge. Do you have any interesting tidbits? Gordon, I'm sure you have plenty where the players are struggling.
Yeah, look, I can imagine now that players are always chirping. There's a lot of fun in the change rooms normally, and you know, the guys are always having something to say when a player comes in. But I think over the last 6 months, where these guys have been off, they probably have come back with a lot of weight on them, and I can just imagine the kind of chirps that people are saying, you know, regarding their bodies and how they look and so on and so forth. Yeah, but the players have got there's a lot of characters at all the clubs, and I'm sure they're coming up with a lot of good chirps at the moment.
Brian, do you have any from your time? Did you ever struggle coming back from the off season?
No, I the one thing I always understood was,
be careful what you say, Brian. I call you every day.
For me, I understood that the importance of preseason, because that's where you load, and that's what is going to carry you the rest of the season. If you have a good preseason, then you're not going to have a lot of problems with injuries and fitness throughout the season. So, as much as it was tough, you know, being in a preseason, but it's things that we had to prepare mentally for. It was not more the physical, but it was more mental. It's a mental challenge that you have to prepare yourself for. And luckily, I never drank when I was playing. You know, I started drinking when I retired.
Hey, celebration. That's what we love to hear. All right, so I've been notified by my engineer we're running close on time here. So let me speed through this. Up next, we have a feature called 10 Quickfire Questions, where we get your favorite PSL players on the line and put them on the spot. This week, we had one Evans Rusika. Have a listen.
Hi, my name is Evans Rusika from SuperSport United. These are my 10 questions.
Who is the funniest guy in the PSL that you have played with?
Gabuza.
Gabuza, of course. And then who is the flashiest dresser that you've played with?
That's my guy's MGZ.
MGZ, yeah. And then who is the worst dressed?
The worst? Ah, man, no. No, man, people will hate me, no.
Okay, I'll leave that one now. What's the worst mistake you've made in a match?
I caused the penalty.
Caused the penalty. Which match was this?
Against Pirates, yeah.
Yeesh. All right. Who's a teammate that thinks that he's funny, but actually his jokes aren't funny?
Man, no, people kill me. no, man. Let's pass, man.
Okay, pass. All right. What is your favorite footballing memory?
My game against Cosmos when we were fighting relegation. The last goal, yeah.
And then what is the best goal you've scored in a match? I have a feeling I know which one.
I'll go with the Cosmos or something. I have a lot, but I'll go with the Cosmos because, you know, we're on a critical position.
Do you remember, would you be able to describe that goal?
Yeah, it was like in the 93rd, yeah. And we were struggling, man. And as Cosmos, they wanted a draw, man. And they were leading, man. And us, if we're going to lose that game, or draw the game, we're going to lose. Then, man, I was like anonymous, like the whole of maybe 80 minutes. They were marking me, man. But I managed to sneak out those 10 minutes and score 2 goals there, man.
Very nice, very nice. Currently, what is your favorite car?
Yeah, I love Mac, man.
Mac, Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, Mercedes-Benz, yeah.
And then what is your favorite local food? Sometimes with international players that you can say something you like here and something you like back home. So what's your favorite dish back in Zimbabwe?
Back in Zimbabwe? I don't know what you call them here, but amaqimbi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's pulp in amaqimbi.
Oh, I see. And yeah. Then lastly, what is your favorite holiday destination?
Man. there's quite a lot of places, man, but I would love to go to Dubai, man, yeah.
Blessed are those who fly to Dubai.
Yeah, man.
And moving swiftly forward, I have this week in football history. A big thank you again to Evans Rusika, by the way. Fantastic gent. All right. This week in 2010, the French Football Federation suspended all 23 members of their World Cup squad at the request of the new manager, Laurent Blanc. This came after Les Bleus refused to train after Anelka was sent home after arguing with the coach during the Mexico game. Of course, France went on to lose to us and got knocked out
finishing bottom of the group. This week back in 1991, Kaizer Chiefs beat Morocco Swallows 2-1 in the National Soccer League, making it 17 wins in a row. And this week back in 1995, Wits University defeated Orlando Pirates in the Coca-Cola League Cup final, having already beaten Kaizer Chiefs in the semifinal stage. And cutting it very, very close, I just want to have a quick look at the players abroad and get your guys' thoughts on this. Percy Tau is set for his third loan stint in Belgium, potentially joining Anderlecht, where he'd be coached by Vincent Kompany. How long do you guys think he should stay in Belgium before trying a different league? Because we all know how talented he is.
Yeah, I'm very surprised because in Belgium and in the last loan stint he had there, I mean, he was player of the year, I think it was. He's been absolutely outstanding. So, you know, I think he'll be looking to go somewhere, maybe back to Brighton because he's only on loan. So, who knows?
Brian?
Yeah, I'm surprised if Brighton don't want to take him now. I think I'm not sure if he doesn't qualify now for a work permit.
Yeah, it's always those issues.
If he still doesn't qualify, for me, I would say then he should be going to, you know, France, Germany, maybe those leagues. For me, I think his overstayed is welcome for me, I think, in Belgium. And as well, I mean, at times as well, you'd see he's been doing well and then he's been benched as well. I think they're more in favor of bigger players. I don't know, his club. But he's done well there for me. I think he should move instead of if there is looking for another loan stint, but it's at a different club, then I would say he'd rather move to another league.
You know, maybe he's going to be nationalized very soon, you know, as a, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's why maybe Brighton do want him back, but he has to spend maybe another year outside somewhere where he can play because English, as you know, in England is very difficult with the work permits. So maybe there's a plan in place where he needs to spend maybe 6 more months or another year before he become nationalised in England. I don't know.
Definitely. And another player who could be on the move is Bongani Zungu, who's definitely looking for a new club after our French side Amiens got relegated. And he could switch to Rangers, Glasgow Rangers, where he would be managed by Steven Gerrard and could potentially play in the Europa League. Would this be a step in the right direction for Mr. Zungu, Gordon?
Yeah, I certainly hope so, you know, because Bongani Zungu, I gave him his debut actually in 2013 for the national team, and he's such a talent. And he must have, now with all the years he's been spending overseas, I think it's been 7 years since then or 6 years, he must have matured so much better. And going to a club like Rangers, I think will be absolutely outstanding for him because he'll be able to show off his talent and the kind of football and the big crowds that we know we get there. So, yeah, I think a move to Rangers will be a great move for him.
Brian, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with the move to Rangers. For me, I'd say he needs a new challenge, a fresh challenge, a new league. And he's been, I think we know his talent, we know what he can offer. But I think for me, he needs a bigger challenge. And the more we have, you know, our players playing in bigger leagues, and for me, if Rangers playing in the Europa League, for me, I think it's good for our national team to have players playing in such big competitions, and I would say yes to that.
Definitely. And speaking of Zungu, I have a car of the week. Bongani Zungu has used some of that hard-earned money in France to purchase a Maserati Ghibli. The Maserati have launched this hybrid, which is more subdued than other Italian performance hybrids like the Ferrari SF90 Stradale or the Lamborghini Sian. It's a turbocharged 2.0-liter inline four-cylinder, and it's assisted by an electric supercharger that draws power from a 48-volt battery. Rather than raw performance, Maserati wants the Ghibli to strike a balance between performance, efficiency, and driving pleasure. CarAndDriver.com gave it a 7 out of 10, and Romelu Lukaku of Inter Milan has also recently gotten this car because of his new deal with Maserati. And ending off the show with a motivational quote of the week. This one comes from the man who would usually do this feature, Sean Roberts, and he's a new dad, and as he posted his new son, he said, "We must be willing to let go of the life we have planned as to have the life that is waiting for us." And I think that's a beautiful sentiment. But a big, big thank you. Thank you so much, Gordon, for joining us on the show again. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much, Lou. And Brian, thanks. Nice chatting to you again.
Yeah, nice chatting to you, coach.
Of course, Brian Baloyi, fantastic to have you on as well. Thank you very much and have a fantastic day.
Thank you very much. Had fun as usual. Thanks.
Sorry to all of our listeners, whether you are listening on SL Radio, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, or Game Time on Mahikeng FM, thank you very much and see you this time next week.
Today is a great day for car wash.
Yeah, sure. Car wash. This is the car wash on Sakala Duma Radio. This is a Hangana Corner.